Earth and Sky.
For those of us who participate in animal-assisted therapy with our own therapy animals, can just see the reaction that patients have when you walk in a room. They smile, they light up, kids start reaching out for the dogs. I mean, you can just see the enjoyment that they receive just from the dog coming into the room. And so the research now, we're trying to find out, okay, what's really physically going on? Is there a physiological benefit that folks are getting?
You're listening to Sandra Barker, and this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science. Dr. Barker is a professor of psychiatry and director of the School of Medicine Center for Animal-Human Interaction at Virginia Commonwealth University. She talked with Earth Sky's Beth Lebwohl about the relatively new field of human-animal interaction.
What are the benefits of human-animal interactions beyond what's obvious?
The obvious is really what's driven many of us researchers into looking at what may be going on physiologically as well as psychologically. One area that has seen quite a bit of research, and that is the physiological reaction to stress, that physiological arousal and the impact that pets can have, whether it's interacting with your own pet or whether it's interacting with an unfamiliar pet, as typically occurs in animal-assisted therapy programs.
When we say pets, are we talking about cats and dogs only, or are we talking about ferrets or fish, or what's the story here?
Well, and it depends upon the researcher. Most of the studies of animal-assisted therapy have been done with dogs because dogs are seen more often as therapy animals in healthcare facilities, and part of that's because there's less risk of zoonotic disease transmission between canines and humans.
I know you recently collaborated on a National Institutes of Health, or NIH, project with Dr. Ann Berger, is that correct?
Yes.
To evaluate the clinical effects of animals, and by which we mean dogs, on hospital patients. What exactly was the NIH trying to find out? How was the research conducted, and what did you find?
What we were interested in finding out is the NIH Clinical Center has routinely has therapy dogs coming in and interacting with patients, and we were interested in seeing the effect of that animal-assisted therapy on distress, both physiological and psychological distress, in cancer patients who were referred for pain and palliative care. And so in our design, what we did was randomly assigned these patients to 30 minutes of interacting with a therapy dog team, animal-assisted therapy, or, it was 20 minutes of a neutral discussion with a recreational therapist. And what we found was that in the animal-assisted therapy condition, there was a significant decrease in their symptoms of depression as well as their feelings of tiredness, which we thought was very important. And these were on validated measures. These were on the Edmonton Symptom Assessment Scale. So it wasn't just that the people were asked, do you feel less depressed or something like that? These were on validated instruments that were administered to the patients.
So can we talk about some other studies more physiologically based, like you've researched, I think, recently the brainwave activity in normal adults interacting with a therapy dog. So what exactly happens in the brain?
And that was so exciting. And we did that study because we wanted to know what's happening in the brain when people are interacting. My particular interest in terms of animal-assisted therapy in healthcare facilities, I was interested in finding out, is there evidence from brainwaves of stress reduction in individuals interacting with an unfamiliar therapy dog? And if so, does it really mirror what happens when people are interacting with their own dog? And so we had, again, this was a small study because it wasn't funded. And so we used a quantitative electroencephalography, which we used to record brain waves. We also looked at the stress hormone cortisol. We also looked at blood pressure and heart rate. And it was very interesting because what we had people do is they came in and we hooked them up to these 24 electrodes to measure the brain waves. And then we had them rest for 30 minutes. Then we had them complete a computerized mental stress task. And then immediately after that, we had half of them were interacting with their own therapy dog. The other half were interacting, and these were all dog owners, were interacting with an unfamiliar therapy dog for 30 minutes, and then the dog was removed, and then they watched a neutral video for 60 minutes so that we could keep measuring the brain waves and the other measures for 60 minutes after that dog interaction. It was very interesting because what we found was the increase in brain waves that you would expect with a stressful task. We certainly saw that after the stress task. There was an increase in the low beta frequency band that is consistent with stressful experiences. Then between the time that the stress task was over and the 30 minutes with a therapy dog was over, we saw an increase in those brain waves, the theta frequency and the alpha frequency significantly increased. And those are the frequency bands that and the activity that we would expect to see associated with relaxation. And so it was a very, very exciting finding because not only did we see those brainwave findings in the individuals with their own dogs, but it was mirrored in those with the therapy dogs. So that was very exciting for us to see that you don't have to be interacting with your own dog. If you're in a hospital and you're interacting with an unfamiliar dog, like occurs with animal-assisted therapy, we're also seeing that relaxation.
But the results in brainwaves were the same.
Right. Very similar. And it mirrored the same patterns we saw in the stress hormone cortisol. We saw similar patterns in systolic blood pressure, again, that stress reactivity. And we also saw it in their self-reported amount of stress.
Would this be different in a pediatric situation?
We are proposing to try to replicate that study with children, but we are looking for some funding in order to be able to do that. It has not been done with children. We really need these larger scale studies, so funding is, to me, by far the biggest challenge.
What's the most important thing you'd like to tell our Skies Global audience?
As you hear about studies that have been published and that have been done, they are not going to be able to convey that powerful interaction that can occur between a single individual and a dog on a particular day. To be able to see a patient who is visibly shaking from anxiety to immediately calm, to see a child who's hooked up to numerous tubes and monitors, to be able to smile when a dog comes in that room and reach out and bury their face in a dog, that you're not going to see from those numbers, and that richness is also there.
You've been listening to Dr. Sandra Barker, professor of psychiatry and director of the School of Medicine Center for Human-Animal Interaction at Virginia Commonwealth University. To subscribe to this and other free science interview podcasts, visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. I'm Deborah Bird. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.